Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerd culture way too much. Joining me today as our special guest is Kristen Maldonado.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing much better than I was last week. I haven't actually said this publicly yet, but 2 weeks ago today, I lost all hearing in my left ear very suddenly. And I was like, what just happened? And like, I figured it out because I was hearing stuff only out of one ear. And so stuff that I could see coming from over there, I was hearing from this direction. I was like, am I going crazy right now? What's happening? So I went to the doctor. He got me some medicine and to start fixing it. It fixed it a little bit, but then it gave me insomnia. And so last week I made some posts about how, hey, I got to take a couple of days off for health reasons. People are like, do you have corona? Like, no, it's something else. It's bad. I'm not quite sure what it is. But now I'm like, my hearing's back like 80, 90%. And so I'm feeling much better. But anyway,
that's enough about me. You're feeling better.
I've been trying to have you on here for like 3 months now. We started talking like back in February or March because you're actually going to come to Texas.
Yeah.
And I can have you live. We're going to talk movies, nerd culture way too much. And then the year 2020 happened.
Yeah.
And it made it very difficult for us to do that. So finally, introduce yourself to us.
Yeah, so hey, I'm Kristen. My YouTube channel is youtube.com/kmaldo, and I love to talk TV, movies, all that fun stuff that I know we all love talking about. And trying to make it through the quarantine. I try to keep busy, trying to, watch a lot of stuff, pick up new hobbies, and, just making it through, as I'm sure we all are.
Work at MTV, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
That's very cool. What do you do there?
I work on the social media team. So I've been there for 7 years since I graduated college. And, I've worked on a bunch of different things from the actual MTV shows. So everything from Ridiculousness to Catfish. And then I moved over to, they brought back TRL. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the music show. They brought that back for a while.
I mean, I'm 10, 15 years older than you. So I absolutely remember that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And, just working on, now I work on the brand social team, which is a lot of fun. Everybody there is so awesome. And we're just all obsessed with pop culture, So we all are like constantly
We'll be talking about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, Griffin.
How's it going?
Hey, man. How's it going? Hey,
I'm good, man. I'm nothing too crazy to report on. I'm glad your hearing's back, though. That's pretty crazy. Like when you were telling me that, I was like, well, is it from your time, like being in hair metal bands or something like that?
Right.
Like I really had no idea. I was just like, this is wild.
I always assumed I'd lose my hearing, but I didn't think it would be like that. Because, I mean, it was literally like, wait, this is just gone. And that's pretty freaky. I thought about making a post about it. Then I was like, this could be really serious. I probably should keep this private.
Yeah,
A little bit more about it. Yeah. And then eventually I did. Hey, real quick, Griffin, if you could tell everybody what you've been up to the last 2 weeks, I have to go grab my baby because we got a problem here.
Yeah, no, that's all good. Yeah, what the hell have I been up to? Well, I launched a Patreon so on my YouTube channel, so that was exciting.
Cool.
I started some new shows and, been working to get some stuff going on my website. So I don't know. It's just
surprise guest.
Oh, there we go. Beautiful.
I don't know if this will work, but that's the difficulties of having everybody working from home at the same time. Wife's on a business call and baby decided that she got lonely and wanted mommy or daddy. Probably not me. And so I don't know if the solution will work, but sorry about that. I cut you off in the middle of what you were saying there.
I was just filling time until you got back.
That will work. So anyway, yes, we'll get started in just a moment talking about our subjects of the day. If you're listening to the audio version, be sure to leave a rating, leave a review. It does help us out in kind of being discovered by brand new people. If you are in the chat, if you send it a super chat, we will address it on the show as long as it is appropriate. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the movie news over the last couple of days, and then we're going to spend a bunch of time talking about the best TV of the first half of the year. And that's why I was excited to have Kristen on here. She's got very different tastes than I do, watches different stuff. That's a lot of what her channel focuses in on. And so we can kind of tackle this from some different perspectives. And with that said, let's get started with our first story of the day. The news that wasn't terribly shocking to anyone, but still not the news we wanted to hear at the same time. Tenet has been delayed indefinitely. There's discussion that perhaps it will be like a scatter release where they'll release it international before it's released in the United States. So if a market is doing a little bit better with everything going on in the world, they'll open up there. And then when it's safe other places, it will open up. And so Griffin and I have talked quite a bit about our thoughts on movie release dates and all this fun stuff. Kristen, what do you make of this?
I mean, I think it's a great idea to push it back, especially with everything going on. You know, it seems like we're getting like a second wave of stuff. So it's like, you know, to be safe for everyone. But also what you said about the opening internationally first just makes it seem like, I don't know, I would imagine if the movie's out there, people will find a way to get access to it, you know, through whatever means, you know. So I don't know if that's necessarily the smartest choice to go with either, because I feel like it could kind of impact people viewing it here as well, you know, like what people might be able to get it in, you know, different ways. And then it might not have the success that it could have here as well.
Well, so I think we have a mutual friend, Jared Buckendahl. He tweeted out whenever they said that, he goes, "Hey, just so you know, if you do this, this will become the most pirated movie of all time."
I definitely agree with that.
And even people that are going to go and see it, pay for it later on, they'll pirate it simply on the fact of, if you don't pirate this movie, if you're active on the internet, it's going to get spoiled for you. Mm-hmm. Whatever the twist is, whatever the stuff that's going to blow our minds, it's going to be on the internet the next day.
Yeah,
and so it just kind of creates a scenario where it's like, oh, all right, well, this sucks, but maybe I do have to. That's the way people think. And then, of course, there's countless other people that they're just going to turn into pirates. I mean, everybody wants to be a pirate, and this gives you a really good reason to become a pirate during the post-apocalyptic year that is 2020. Griffin, how about you? What did you think about this one?
Yeah, surprise? No. But the fact that they're talking about like doing a non-traditional rollout of the movie makes sense. I think, I mean, there were rumors going around that like it'll release internationally on August 26th or something like that, and then on Labor Day weekend will be when Tenet hits theaters and drive-ins and stuff like that. To me, that's probably the smart way to go if they're going to do this, because at least now they know what the state of the world is. They don't know what the state of the world is going to be in like December or November. And either way, I feel like it's going to be years before there's even like some sense of normalcy. So like they might as well just like try and recuperate some of their profits now and just have a longer theatrical run. I agree with you. Like you run into the piracy issues, but then, I mean, that's a problem when like any time that a film comes out, like there are times when movies come out in the UK first or like other international regions first before they come to the US and vice versa, you know? So it's like, you know, we're just going to have to be on the other side of that for once because we live in a country where we don't know how to handle this pandemic that's going on. And then, you know, I also think if they did the August 26th, like international release and then the Labor Day domestic, that could actually work out pretty well because it's like, it's not that long of a wait to actually go see the movie in theaters. So I feel like people would be more inclined to like, just say, hey, well, instead of watching this really crappy cam of Tenet, which is not going to give me the same like experience and feeling that I get when seeing it in the theaters, I'm just going to wait like a week or so and then just go see it at a drive-in or something like that. So I mean, I don't know. And then the other thing is they could start rolling it out like in individual states first, like sort of like what independent films do. So yeah, I don't know. That's, I'm not surprised that this is happening. I'm finally glad that it's like indefinitely off the table so that every week we're not getting an announcement on it because I think it's really killed the buzz for the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just thinking that same thing. It's like, how many times can we push back these films and then still be excited? You know, it's like after a while you're like,
yeah,
here we go again. No,
I that's why I agree. That's why I think like a film like No Time to Die, like they need to decide within like the next couple of weeks whether or not they want to push it to next year or whether or not it should come out in November, because if they don't decide until it gets close to release, they're going to kill the momentum for that film again. They're going to sink a bunch of money into the marketing, and then it's just going to be, you know, people are going to get annoyed.
Yeah, real quick, Kristen, if you can turn your volume down, I think we're getting a little bit of bounce back on you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I to kind of loop back around on all of this, I think that we've here on the podcast said it many times that this is probably the best move for most movies to just sit, let's pull it indefinite. Yeah. And stop trying to guess when everything's going to get better when we just don't know. So right off the bat, I think this is probably what most companies should do until this thing is under control. And then I think the other side to it of the idea of a scattered release is not ideal. The idea of opening in individual states is not ideal, but nothing about this year is. That's the thing about this is like, you just have to like, they have to realize there's a new normal for 2020 that you just can't play by the normal set of rules. It does not work when you're in the middle of this very literally once in a hundred years, once in a century situation that we've never dealt with. You have to start going outside the box and realizing, okay, the whole plan is out. What is the best we can do with what we have? And that's not trying to pick a date a month from now. Yeah. And, you know, I've over the last couple of days, I've had a ton of people DM me being like, looks like Tenet is the new Mutants. Like,
no.
not really a fair comparison, but I get the comparison. And that's what a lot of people are thinking. They're just immediately going, oh, they just keep delaying. So, well, New Mutants is a totally different beast. It's a totally different. It is a little freak mutation of a film with the way that they were going to reshoot and then studio acquisitions and then a pandemic. That's different. Yeah. But at the same time, from the perspective of kind of average Joe, they're like, oh, I'm waiting for this movie to come out in 2 months. Oh, it's pushed back again. It's pushed back again. And to your point of like, you know, what do people actually perceive? They perceive that this is this movie, that it's tough to get excited for it when every time you set your heart on something, then it's delayed, as opposed to all those ones they just pushed back to next year. You just kind of put it in a different category. You mentally think about it differently. And so you don't have like a false anticipation for it. So I think it's the right move to just, I think everybody should just clear the table for a little bit. If things are awesome 2 months from now, it's like, no, we are opening up and we're good and we've got control of this. Put dates, but do that once we're actually kind of in the clear and not just throwing these Hail Marys like hoping, man, if I just we go for it, we'll be good. No, it doesn't seem like that's going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the other thing is like, you know, I feel like some movies, like some studios are just going to have to release movies. Like they're just going to have to do it and like see what happens. So like, why not just try it? Just leave it in theaters for a longer period of time. Like you'll recuperate a good chunk of the money back if you're able to do that, especially when a lot of these movies make most of their money back internationally. Like Nolan's films, he makes a bigger chunk of his money back like in international release. Now the question comes, how much of that comes from China? Because China did implement that new rule where it's like if a movie is over 2 hours, it cannot screen in theaters. So it's like how much of that is going to affect the box office? So it's like if both China and the United States are currently off the table for that release, then I can understand like, you know, not even thinking about releasing this film yet.
Right. And I don't know. That's what makes all this so crazy, that there are so many weird moving parts. Like, just stop and think how crazy that is that one of the factors on the table about when Tenet, how Tenet is released, is that China decided that they won't allow movies over 2 hours long in an era where every blockbuster except Justice League is over 2 hours long.
Yeah. I think it had something to do with like the COVID thing, but it's still, it's like,
right, if like people, why would you reopen if that, like, what's the,
I know it's just like, I don't think people sitting in a theater for 30 minutes over 2 hours is really going to do anything to prevent the spread of COVID in that space. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
I think the other thing is kind of what you were saying before, Sean, is just like, you know, thinking outside the box. I think that this time has allowed certain companies to really do some unique things with how they release films and stuff, like how they released Trolls World Tour and stuff, and seeing like, can we be successful in doing like a completely digital, and, you know, like in going digital so quickly, right, with certain films. And I think that that's really interesting to see, like, how will things change in the future? You know, and taking a look at certain films and being like, is this really a blockbuster movie? Is this really a theater movie? Or is this a movie that would maybe be better off on streaming? Like The Lovebirds was one that I thought, like, oh yeah, this was a better choice actually to go to Netflix than to go into theaters. I don't think it would have had maybe as much success in theaters. And at least with streaming, you're able to get more eyes on it.
And even to kind of run off of that in kind of a bit of a different direction, this last week, Netflix kind of put out some of their numbers on their biggest hits. Extraction, I mean, their number one movie. And you go, I don't think that would have been a big event film in theaters, but they put it on Netflix in the middle of all this. And I think that there's probably a whole bunch of studio executives that need to be looking at all this new data that they're getting of, like, both in terms of where do you release things, which things that are finished should they look to put on streaming, that this just might be that movie that cuts through, that is the one that's going to do great. And then even beyond that, rethinking, like, should we be gambling $250 million on a lot of the stuff that we're doing? Should we put more focus on these smaller films that are lower risk? They're not going to have as big of a roar, but you can put them in a lot more places and have more safer bets.
Mm-hmm. New Mutants.
Speaking of New Mutants, so just yesterday, a leaked supposed new trailer for New Mutants fell on the internet. It did have new footage in it, which is the part that makes it especially confusing. And at the end of it, it said that it will be streaming, I believe, on September 4th on Disney Plus, or September 6th, right around that window, which led Twitter to go insane, speculating as to what all of this means. Is it finally actually going to drop on Disney Plus? Because, you know, so many people have been saying they just need to drop it on a streaming service. The complication to that is that going back years, Fox, who's the ones that actually made New Mutants, cut a deal with HBO. So HBO has first streaming rights, which makes all of this more complicated, because now HBO is a competitor to both of the Disney-owned streaming services. So someone over on Instagram sent a message to the director asking, hey, is this deal real? And basically responded back, fake as far as I know, plus cobbled together. So it says it's fake, doesn't think it looks real. And then he says, as far as I know, no one at Disney has told me, and I think HBO has first run after theatrical and digital release, but that could have changed. So that's what the director had to say about it, that kind of leans into some of the speculation. Since no one's confirmed it's real, nobody knows where it came from. It is quite the mystery because it had new footage in it, which is weird. Kristen, what do you make of this one?
I mean, conspiracy, you know, like, yeah, it's a funny thing. I guess we won't know until someone really says. I mean, I personally think that it would be cool for it to go to streaming, especially, you know, as we've talked about, like, it's one of those movies that at this point feels like they pushed it back so much. There's been so much, you know, drama around it that it's like, just put it out. We'll just watch it. You know, like, I don't think that it's a movie necessarily at this point that I care to see in theaters. I would be happy to watch it on HBO or Disney Plus.
And I think that's the key right there. I think that this is a movie that in theaters, I don't think it's going to be a big blockbuster. Dark Phoenix wasn't a big blockbuster, but you drop a mutant X-Men Marvel-tied property on streaming right now, it's the sort of thing that anyone's, oh, look, there's a new X-Men kind of movie on streaming. They'll click on it while they might not necessarily go out and buy a ticket for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I guess I do agree with you. I think that if they wanted to release it in theaters, people might go. Like, they could do something where it's like they could show it at drive-ins. They could drop it on paid VOD first. I'm really shocked that hasn't been a consideration. And then, you know, have it be available. That would basically just do what they did with Onward. Even though Onward had a small theatrical window, I feel like they could do something similar where, yeah, the drive-ins, the paid VOD, and then like afterwards, maybe they like cut a deal with Warner Brothers or they buy out a part of that contract that's like, hey, can we just get this on Hulu and or Disney Plus, and then we'll have it on there forever and then hopefully recuperate some of that money. I mean, I understand the hesitation because they've already dumped so much into this thing, but yeah, I don't know. I'm just kind of tired of talking about films that are like, it's coming out. It's happening, yeah, guys. And then it's like, well, no, it's not really happening. It's like this. I don't know. It's like, and then why would they have a panel at Comic-Con if it's not going to come out soon, or if they're not going to move it or something like that? I mean, I understand like currently its theatrical release is August 28th, which I honestly completely forgot because I just assumed that nothing else was coming out. But like, currently that is the case. I mean, you got to believe that they're going to change it, or they're going to announce something at Comic-Con, because the entire cast is there. The entire or the director is there. Like, everyone involved with this movie is going to be there. So it's like, why would you not say something then? Right. So I don't know.
Well, and like a month ago, I would have said, I mean, it's not going to drop on streaming because of this HBO deal. That's just they're not going to give it to a competitor. But then we have, you know, this huge spike over the last month where it's like, man, just all bets are off. Like, it does not look like movies are coming out anytime soon. And certainly you can't safely predict anything. And as soon as you kind of get in that situation, you have to imagine Disney's calling up HBO being like, come on, like, what can we do? What, how can we negotiate some, free some stuff up or whatever that looks like? What does it cost? Because obviously we're not going to let you have it. This sucks for everybody.
Yeah.
Let's cut a deal. And, I have no idea how vindictive HBO Max is. We're going to hold on to this one.
Well, here's the thing. Maybe they aren't able to cut a deal, but the film still goes to HBO Max, but they're able to cut a deal where it's like something similar to the Sony one, where like some of the profits still go to Disney. So it's like, at least it'll be on a streaming service. And then HBO Max is great for them. But then if like some of those profits are able to kick back to Disney, it could be like, you know, profitable for both studios. I have no idea. I can't see Disney wanting to do that, especially with a film like that. But where like the potential is there for them to make a lot of money on VOD. So I have no idea.
Conspiracy theory. What if that teaser that came out was what they were going to release at Comic-Con and it got leaked early and now they have to scramble and change everything because they don't want everyone to be like, yeah, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, that's entirely true. That's because that was the other thing, because Daniel Richtman online, who's like, Twitter, a very well-known Twitter scooper. He said, checked in with the Disney rep. They said that this is fake. And then Skyler Schuller, who runs the Disney Insider thing, who has a lot of connections there, he was like, well, actually, I'm being told that no, this is definitely what they're going down. And I mean, you're not wrong in believing what was told to you, because that's definitely what they've done before. I mean, they did the same thing with Solo. So like, Josh Boone could be playing coy. You can't trust just one single Instagram message, but like, knowing that it came from the director himself, I think that gives it a little bit more credibility. And I would think that Boone would want to get hype going for his film. So it's like, if it was real, he would just say, yeah, it was real. It got leaked, like whatever, you know,
you would think. But I feel like also, I don't know, I've just seen situations in television where, you know, the people are asking the creators and the creators don't really know because they're not the ones that actually put together that plan. So they don't, you know, they might find out after the fact, but like there's a whole team that has to put together, when are we, you know, here's the trailer, when are we launching, here's the social team, here's, you know, so I could see situations where like, you know, there's just, maybe they just don't know the information yet because they're not the ones that actually put it together. They get told after the fact.
Yeah, that's a good point for sure. So it's like, you know, he could be telling the truth, but just might not know something. So you're right. There's a lot of factors at play. Ultimately, we're not going to know anything until the panel on Thursday, and hopefully they just clarify when this thing is coming out and in what way is it coming out.
And even to what you guys just said, you look at what he said. He says, as far as I know, no one at Disney has told me. And even like the HBO stuff, but like he's saying it the same way we're saying all of this.
Like, I think maybe.
Yeah, maybe. What I heard was it, like, that sounds like a guy that is not sitting in a bunch of meetings with Disney high ups and they're like, here's our big plan for your movie. Mm-hmm. This sounds like a guy that's like, I would love to know too.
I mean, they basically retooled his film without him knowing originally when they were like, well, we don't really like what you're doing here, Josh Boone. We don't think that it's scary enough we think it's too scary or something like that. And obviously that kind of led to the whole production issues going on with it. Thankfully, he was able to reclaim control of his vision. So who knows? Who knows?
Yep. And I mean, there's a interview where someone asked, was it Anya Taylor-Joy about it?
Oh, yeah.
A year ago. And they walk up to her to say, hey, can you tell us anything about what's going on with New Mutants? And you just see her eyes get big.
Yeah.
And it's like, she hasn't thought about this. No one's communicated with her about it. She's like, I get to play a very intriguing character. It was fun to work with the people and a great experience. I mean, it was just like as generic.
I'm going
to be positive about a thing that I don't know what to say. I have nothing to say. I don't know what's going on. And I haven't thought about this in 10 years because they shot this movie forever ago.
Yeah, that's what's crazy to me is that like the actors now look vastly different from when they shot that movie. Like, I mean, even like some of the older ones, like Anya Taylor-Joy, when she first shot this film, was like right on the onset of when she was coming out and people were like really starting to recognize her. She looks completely different. Like Charlie Heaton on Stranger Things, like went through, I guess, like a lot of personal issues and then also just looks different. Maisie Williams literally grew up on Game of Thrones and like did New Mutants during like when she had a free track while that show was still on. And then like she looks complete. Like it's just so weird to think that this was supposed to come out in 2017?
Oh, whoa.
Or something like that. I don't even know. I could be wrong. Maybe like 2018 or 19 or something. But
I think it was 2 years ago that it was fall 2018, I think. But that's to say they put the first trailer out 6 months before that, which means they shot it a year before that. And so it's like it was supposed to come out 2 full years ago and it's been promoted for 2.5 years.
So thought, sort of going on a different tangent. So I know when Hamilton came out, everyone was like, well, that doesn't count as a movie. They filmed it in 2016. Well, what about in situations like this where, you know, this movie, New Mutants, was filmed so long ago, you know, does that, like, how is that different or similar, I guess, if you know what I mean?
I would say that it's different in that Hamilton is a filmed musical production of a Broadway that is already in existence. While I believe it's a movie, I can understand why people would say, oh, well, it doesn't really count because like, it was filmed in 2016. It didn't like, you know, it's just a reproduction of what was already on stage. It's like, how can you count that as a theatrical release? Mm-hmm. Whereas like, I think with a traditional film, if you were to film that, like, I mean, look at somebody like Boyhood, because like Boyhood was filmed over the span of 20 years. So technically it's like, if you were going by those rules, does that really count? So I think it was less so when it was filmed and more so it's a music. It's literally a filmed musical.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be entirely what people are objecting to. Like some people will say the 2016 thing, which doesn't really make any sense because how movies are made. But it's because they're essentially just doing the musical and they filmed the stage. And so people object to that. All right. In just a moment, we're going to move on talking about our favorite television of the first half of the year. That's going to start in just a couple of minutes. So panelists, be thinking about that. Comment section. Let us know some of your favorite shows. But we did have a couple super chats come in. First one, CM Waters asks, if this pandemic happened any other year, what's one theatrically released movie that you think would have been ushered to streaming? I think the generic answer is kind of anything that's high concept and lower budget. Low budget being like 50 million or under. Like Blumhouse films feel like prime stuff to usher to streaming, because it's like an idea that hooks you. They don't need to make $1 billion. That's the whole Blumhouse model, is that they made a movie for $10 million that makes people go, oh, I'm interested in that concept. Let me go see that, which is perfect for the streaming model, which is like, oh, that's an interesting concept. Let me click on that. Like I remember back when I delivered paint, it would be like about once a month I would show up to work and there'd be some new Netflix movie that I hadn't seen a trailer for. I didn't know anything about it, but it was just kind of this high concept. What if the apocalypse happened? And then it has some actor you recognize. And so I'd show up to work and people be like, hey, did you see Withdrawal Syndrome, or, you know, whatever it would be. I mean, made that title up. And I'm like, I have no clue what you're talking about. And then they could describe the plot in a sentence and they clicked on it just because it has that, it tickles something in their brain and it's got an actor they recognize to give it credibility. So I think anything like that, the Blumhouse model just stuff seems perfectly primed to go straight over. What are some ones that comes to mind for you, Kristen?
I definitely agree with that. Although, you know, I think they have a couple of like select ones that I'm like, you know, I think, you know, Happy Death Day, that would make sense to go on.
Chicago, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
The Purge movies, totally. Mm-hmm. You know, Get Out, I think, is one that I would have been like, oh, let's wait on this, because, you know, that one, you know, was one that ended up being so, you know, like
prestige. It's more of a prestige.
For real. But yeah, so I definitely agree with that. The Blumhouse movies, and I'm trying to think of like what other movies have come out recently.
2019 feels like 10 years ago. Far back. Trying to think through like which ones, but trying to think through some of the comedies or kind of mid tier stuff along those lines. That
maybe like a that Sonic. A lot of the like young adult movies.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I think a lot of those.
Yeah. It's stuff that appeals to those audiences that might not even have as much disposable income, but they're just sitting there on technology looking to watch something. The people that message me all the time, hey, I'm bored, what can I watch? Like people like that. I think those are the stuff targeting them is perfect. Griffin, any come to mind for you?
I would say most animated movies that aren't Pixar. I could see a lot of or Disney, really, to be honest with you. I mean, we've already seen them doing that right now. So, maybe The Grinch, when that was like, but then again, I don't know. It's Dr. Seuss and they might have wanted to like hold off just on name recognition and stuff. But like, I don't know. Secret Life of Pets.
There's Illumination films sometimes. I mean, Minions made $1 billion. Those are like the secret billionaires right there.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's like I'm so unsure about which ones they would go to VOD. I mean,
you know what would have maybe been a really good one, and I think this is one that didn't get enough hype in theaters. Booksmart. I feel like that maybe, especially if it was released in a time like now, maybe would have gotten the same kind of recognition as like Palm Springs, where everyone's like talking about it nonstop. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great one. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, a lot of those, like if literally the same thing that is happening this year happened in another year, where it's like we still had part of the year for like festival films, I think a lot of those movies that were like early festival favorites 100% would be going to VOD. I mean, like Brandon Cronenberg's Possessor, that's like primed to kill it on VOD. A lot of those movies. I'm really kind of unsure why A24 is still like being really, you know, uppity about like releasing films on VOD. Like, you are the last distributor that's going to get your movies like in theaters and like actually make money back. Let's be real. If Warner Brothers is struggling to get Tenet in theaters and make $800 million back, you sure as hell are not going to make like a decent profit off of The Green Knight. Like, come on, guys.
All right. Once again, start throwing your favorite shows in. We got one more super chat and move on. SPC Birds 317-1993 says, hey guys, do you think pushing New Mutants back as far and often as they did is really going to hurt the film? I'm still excited, but not as much. It's hard to build momentum when nobody believes you have a release date. It's hard to build momentum when every time you get excitement, then you cut the legs off of it. And then you build bad buzz when you have a backstory, which is, Fox doesn't believe in this. And Fox is, you know, obviously known for cranking out great movies. I mean, there's this window where Fox was not making good stuff. And then they were like, we don't even think this one's very good. We want to do reshoots on it. So there's all this kind of bad buzz already surrounding it. Plus it's delayed. And then Disney's like, I guess we'll just release it as it was. And then it's delayed four more times. Oh, of course that hurts the momentum. It hurts the buzz. It hurts everything because you can't trust it. And it just doesn't feel like you have a winning product, especially when no one associated with it seems to know anything. That's a problem. Krista, what do you think?
I agree. This is definitely a movie that I'm not anticipating for theaters. Like, I would rather sit at home and watch it, to be honest. So if it goes to theaters, like, I don't plan to go.
You're the perfect example.
This is a movie that I would go see. I just feel like at this point, I would rather watch it at home.
Right. Any final thoughts on that one, Griffin?
No. I mean, like, has it made people less interested? No. If anything, I think it's brought a little bit more attention to it, because it's like when it was first announced, it was like the New Mutants. People were just like, well, what the hell is that? Because I mean, it doesn't necessarily say X-Men on right. it, which I wouldn't want it to. But like, still, I think you just look at the trailer and people are like, oh, OK, so it's like a horror superhero movie.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. I guess with the more publicity that it's gotten and being this infamous movie that just was shot over 2 years ago and still hasn't seen the light of day, I think that's enough to really get people interested. It's like, well, what is this thing going to be? On top of it just being like, you know, an X-Men movie, yeah. and such. But I don't know. If they keep dancing around the release date, I think it could get a little tiresome.
Yeah. And well, now there's like a mystery surrounding it. There's like, what yeah. is this movie? Will it
what
ever
is
happen?
New Mutants? Yeah.
And yeah. anytime you have that intrigue, that does help a little bit. But I even on stuff like that, there's what do we know as people that make shows like this and watch shows like this versus the guy that lives across the street from me that, you know, occasionally across the, you know, yell at him like, hey, did you see that new movie? He's like, no, I haven't even heard of that. Like, what is the average Joe that, of course they love movies because everybody does, but the average Joe sees like 10 movies per year. Yeah, and what yeah. does this do for that guy?
I forget that it's even coming out.
Exactly. Like, yeah. like, oh yeah, that was a thing that existed. And I think those are the perfect people. Everything we said about the streaming version, that they'll click that stream button. If they're just sitting, it's 9 o'clock at night. And then they open up Hulu, Disney Plus, HBO, wherever it is. And they go, oh, a Marvel movie on here. Oh, cool,
people will watch it. Like, my God, you have the horror fans who will watch it.
Yeah.
You have the comic book fans who will watch it. You have people who are just like, have heard about it in passing, who are just like, oh, this is now available. Wow. Okay. I'll give this a watch. I mean, if somebody like Bird Box can like mm-hmm. crack exactly. Netflix's top 10, how
sequel. Is
yeah, exactly. Like, and it's not a good movie. Like, well, then New Mutants should be just fine. So it's just kind of baffling.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving along to our big subject of the day for our final little stretch here. Our favorite television of 2020 thus far. And yeah, if we could just kind of put like a whole bunch of different things out there, sell us on what different people should check out. That would be a lot of fun. I've only watched like the most obvious stuff. So my list isn't terribly interesting. Kristen, if you can kick us off, what's something that people should check out and who's like the target for that show? What do you got for us?
Okay. Well, one of my favorites of this year had to be the new Babysitter's Club series that came out this past month. It is definitely for those nostalgic fans of this series who grew up with it back in the 80s when it first came out, but also for like a new young audience. Like, I think this is something that, you know, like if you have kids, you can watch it with your kids, but you also will enjoy it because they have references to everything from Clueless to Hamilton. You know, you're following these young feminist entrepreneurial young women, you know, the power of friendship, but also still that nostalgia of like, you know, all the things from the books that you remember, like the legendary phone that they had in someone's bedroom, like, oh my God, back in the day, you had your own phone and your own phone line. What? Like, you know, it was just a lot of fun to watch. They stayed so faithful to the series, the book series, but also added new elements that I think really show that they paid attention to, like, the franchise as a whole was something that really pushed boundaries. They were very focused on being inclusive and showing different people of different backgrounds and different religions in the books. And they did that in this as well. They even told a trans story, which was so moving. And, you know, I think that they really took the story to the next level in a way that was so faithful to what people who grew up with it experienced, you know. And, yeah. And I loved it. It's definitely like one of my top favorites of the year.
Yeah, we had Rachel Wagner on here 2 weeks ago, and so she started raving about it too, and saying good things. And I guess that's even one of the ways that I reached out to you. It was over because you were praising in the comments on that one, or chat on that one. But yeah, I've only heard really positive things from people that, like, they just did a really good job with it. I am not the target audience. I didn't read the books. I'm not super familiar with it. But my wife's been like, "Huh, I read the. I wonder if I should check this out."
You should. I think she'd really like it. Yeah.
Griffin, what's one for you? Yeah.
I mean, Westworld season 3. I mean, I think, you know, people, I don't know, they either really love the show or they're just kind of over what they're doing, but I don't know. I thought season 3 had a lot of interesting things to say, and it took the series in a new direction, obviously outside of the park, and was more focused on, like, just, you know, what does it mean to be, or like, what our society sort of mirroring that of, like, a you know, an AI controlled world and stuff. So, and just, like, amazing performances, great visual effects. If you like the Nolans, this is, Jonathan Nolan and his wife, Lisa Joy. They're the creators behind this show and the showrunners basically of it right now. So, if any of that is, like, interested, if you're interested in any of that, I would definitely go and watch the first two seasons and then get caught up with season 3, because it'll be another couple of years before we see the next season. But yeah,
that's their normal pace, even when there isn't a pandemic. I mean, they take their time on these ones, and HBO lets them take their time. And essentially, both Nolans are married to their producer wives, or like the both of them are like partner. Like, you watch any of the special features on any Nolan movie going back 20 years, and it's cutting back and forth between Christopher and his wife, and then his brother shows up, and then Jonathan's working with his wife as well. Yeah, I'm halfway through season 3. I'm one of the people that's in that category of man, I love season 1, and then 2 and 3 have just been...
It's totally, like, fine. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You guys took this in a different... It just feels like they should have stretched a little bit more of the season 1 stuff. And, yeah. I mean, they ended that one so definitively in a direction of, like, okay, we're going somewhere different season 2. Yeah. And I would have liked to have spent more time in there before we went in that direction. All right, so I'll give one... I'll give the obvious one for my fan base, Clone Wars, season 7. You know, I'm not the biggest Clone Wars fan, but I think this might have been my favorite season from, as best I can recall. I thought they did some really interesting stories, especially because it really started to overlap with episode 3. And you could see these events from different perspectives. And even before we got there, we're like spending time on Coruscant. Like, what is the world like? How are people perceiving what the Jedi are doing, that suddenly everyone would turn on them, and you go, oh, there's like this whole, how other people would perceive all this stuff differently, and all the wreckage that comes from all these battles and stuff has consequences, and people feel the pain of that, and it's not the Jedi. Because I thought they did some of that really, really well. Along these lines, we had a Super Jack coming from the Star Wars guy. He says, hey, Sean, love your podcast. What Star Wars classic character should get their own Disney Plus show? I want Knights of the Old Republic and Vader. Simple answer for me is that, I don't like to think about it from that perspective. I don't like to think what character should have a show, because that's not plot based. It's not story based. It's like, what thing has name recognition? And I just don't think that's the best way to come up with a concept. I definitely wouldn't want a Vader show, because the inherent nature of the character, like watching his day to day, that wouldn't work. Watching him, you know, killing people as the protagonist, that doesn't work all that well. I don't like, it seems like a great idea until you're like, oh, he's a sociopath that's killing people. And this isn't Dexter. This does not translate properly.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a story where I could enjoy some of it, but I don't want a full series about that. I think Knights of the Old Republic could be a good show or a good movie. I'd be all for that. The one exception to everything I just said is I think Kenobi sounds like there's actually, that's a character that we know where he was. We know where he ends up. And you go, what was he doing for 20 years? And I think you could potentially do a Western in the Star Wars universe with him that's interesting. Like that to me, I can get behind that one. But for the most part, I'm not like, oh man, what if we saw like young Yoda? He was only like 150 years old and he was learning to pick up his first table in rocks. And please don't do that. Please don't do that. Anyone that characters or like it's a show that you'd be get you to either of you'd be interested in?
Not a characters, but not characters, but just like an era, like obviously the Old Republic, yeah. Just get away from
exactly
everything that we know, and just explore a new time period with characters that we have never met before.
Christian, are you a Star Wars person?
No, not really.
So like what's your favorite extended universe book from the early era of the aughts?
What do those words mean? I like BB-8. I know he's
BB-8 the TV show,
but I would take all the little robots doing a TV show.
But yeah, so like they announced a new show, The Bad Batch, which is a sequel to the Clone Wars show that's following this group of clones. And like my immediate reaction was like, this is the exact era I want them to move away from. And I've been saying this for years. They just keep going to the time period between episode 2 and episode 4 and telling more and more stories about more and more characters that are already established in the same window of time, which Kenobi is also this same time period. And I just want them to go to a different time period. I don't want to keep exploring the Empire. Yeah. You have this big, gigantic, massive world, and we keep looking at the same time period, the same characters in the same locations.
I feel that's how I felt a little bit for a while about Spider-Man, because I just felt like they kept doing Green Goblin, Green Goblin, yeah. Green Goblin. It's like, there's so many other characters.
There's so many villains, yeah.
So many other villains. Let's dive into some more of those. So I'm glad they're starting to finally do that now. But
Yeah.
Right. I had another super chat come in, and maybe one of you can chime in a little bit on this one. Denzel Solnatki. I'm very sorry. I'm sure I mispronounced your name. I know you're busy, but please make some time for Dark. Dark season 3 is the best TV since Breaking Bad season 5. It is so much more complex than Nolan films. Whew! That is a bold statement right there.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think it's like a really solid TV show. It's all in German, if I'm not mistaken. Okay,
let me pause real quick. Say I haven't seen any of Dark, and I get tons of requests for it. Griffin, sell me on it.
Oh God. It's like Stranger Things, but like with an edge to it. It's like, it's no pun intended. It's like darker. It's a little bit more, mature, but I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give anything away, but it's just like, it's thought provoking. And like, again, like, yeah, if you like the Stranger Things vibes, but like a little less superficially 80s, Dark is probably like up your alley. It is a really solid show. Like it's well acted, well written. You just have to deal with subtitles, which I don't think that's an issue for you, but.
Yeah. I recently learned to read, so I'm pretty pumped about that.
I was a little concerned.
I have someone next to me reading all the comments to me so I can follow on. Oh. Kristen, what's some other TV that you've enjoyed in the year 2020 thus far while stuck at home?
Yes. Some other TV that I enjoyed, man, there's so much. On My Block season 3 was really good. I love On My Block. I don't know if you guys have watched it, but it's basically following young people, young Black and Latino youth living in East LA, and it's like really funny, but also they dive into some really serious topics involving gang life and stuff. And the first season was great because they had like this whole like Goonies-esque mystery going on. And then the second season got like really deep into like, like shootings and stuff and PTSD. And then this third season like continued this mystery that they've been going on. And it ends on this insane cliffhanger where it's like, if they don't get a season 4, I don't know what's going on. Because it just like will leave you shook. It will leave you shook. The characters are just, you know, they really have a great balance of being funny, but also dealing with a lot of issues that people go through in life. And it's just such a good show. If you're
what was it called?
On My Block.
Okay.
Yes.
I have not really heard good. That one. So.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. Griffin, what's another show that's been in some great television this year for you?
Well, there's, I won't talk about this because it's definitely, it's not up anyone's alley here, but there's the Derek Gianfranc show. I know this much is true with Mark Ruffalo, who plays like two versions of Mark Ruffalo. It's really great. It's an exceptional series, on HBO, which if you're just interested in learning more about it, check it out. But, the one that I was going to bring up is, it's actually a docuseries. And I'm blanking on the name of it because it's still airing right now, but it's the one, where Michelle McNamara uncovered the Golden State Killer. And it is so good. The thing I love about it is that it balances Michelle's story with like the actual case of like the Golden State Killer. And it's really a story about how she like uncovered this serial killer. I think we're only three episodes in right now. I think we're only three episodes in right now, but like every Sunday
I'll be gone
we're getting
in the
a
dark.
New episode. Yeah, I'll be gone in the dark. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I always blank on the name. I keep wanting to say something else, but that's been really interesting. It's like if you are a big true crime fan and you want your true crime fix, this is just like edge of your seat, like riveting from episode to episode. Some great interviews with people involved. Patton Oswalt is obviously interviewed in it because that was his wife. I'm thoroughly enjoying that right now.
Speaking of riveting television involving interviews and a compelling crime drama. Yeah, you're talking about 2020. You got to talk about Tiger King. Then at the same time, it's like, wow, that was this year. Yeah, it was this year. But what a bizarre real life event of like just put together perfectly to like entice you around this world in one direction. And at the end of each episode, they go, oh, by the way, and then they introduce something new to you that makes you go, wait, what is this? And then you follow the next episode that explores that person and this crazy thing that's even crazier than the previous episode that was already insane. And then, wait, she killed her husband. Wait, he's running for president, governor, hitman for hire. What? An arm getting bitten off was like, hey, I don't know. When can we kind of throw in this part where this the arm gets bitten off? I guess let's just put it right here at the beginning. Like, a person's arm is bitten off and they return to work a week later. And that's a throwaway little detail that happened. And they're just interviewing the person, and there's the arm. You're like,
yeah,
what? I was late to the party, did a podcast. Jonathan Flickinger was on here. Griffin and Mr. Flickinger were both like, dude, you got to watch Tiger King. I was like, all right, I'll check it out tonight. And binged the whole thing. We started like 9 o'clock at night, binged the whole thing, went to bed at 6 a.m. or whatever. And did not regret that decision because it was wow. And we didn't even get into the weird sex cult lion club. So many bizarre things that what going on in that one. Whew, Tiger King.
It's kind of nuts to think that like came out this year because I feel like people are so over it, like it was just beaten to death, and now no one wants to talk about it anymore. It's wild, man. That's so weird.
Yep. I guess the first breakout star of pandemic 2020.
It really was. Yeah.
the perfect weird thing, right as we were all locked at home. A couple super chats came in. It says Dark is available in an English dub. So that could be useful when I'm able to check that one out. Next one, we had the Star Wars guy asks, have you ever played online Battlefront 2? The short answer for me is a little bit. I have. I'm not a big online gamer because I don't like to embarrass myself. And I don't like to, there's like a learning curve, and I want the learning curve to be just me learning. And it's not me jumping in with a bunch of people that only play Star Wars, spend money on Star Wars, know every place to hide. So I just jump in and someone as Yoda is just slices me to pieces and I'm dead. So I haven't done too much of Battlefront online, especially not recently. But all right, one final round on here. Make some quick TV recommendations. What are some things people should check out while we're stuck at home and movies aren't coming out? What do you got for us, Kristen?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Let me list off all my good ones. this year was really big for reality TV for Netflix, which was really cool. They were like trying some different stuff and different formats and how they release stuff. So The Circle and Love is Blind were crazy. And I definitely recommend checking those out. Lock and Key was fun, which is like a comic book adaptation of this series where basically like there's this house that has all of these locks and these kids find these keys and they can do crazy things with them, like, you know, unlock someone's head and see what's inside it, or, you know, unlock a door and they go through and become a ghost. And it was like really fun, a lot of great visuals. Utopia Falls was another fun one that was on Hulu, and it was sort of this strange combination of dystopian story, like Hunger Games, but also like Dance with the Stars sort of, and like hip hop. So they were adding like Snoop Dogg was the voice of this like machine that told you all about the things of the past, and they like dove into all this hip hop stuff. That was so fun. It wasn't a perfect show, but it was, I really loved it. I don't know. It's a Canadian show. I love a Canadian show. I also really enjoyed all the CW shows during the quarantine. I've just been like, they brought me so much joy. Katie Keene was so much fun. It's like kind of this rose-colored glasses, New York City trying to make it in fashion and Broadway and music. And Nancy Drew, it was like a crazy mystery. If you kind of want a different story of Nancy Drew where they actually dive into supernatural stuff. And I also really enjoyed Warrior Nun and Upload. So Warrior Nun sounded like, what is this?
Yeah.
But yeah. I think that they set up a story to really go somewhere interesting in season two about, like, I mean, these women that are nuns, but also fighting evil, because, yeah, I mean, why wouldn't nuns be the ones that defend us against demons? That makes sense. Upload, where they, you know, you get to see what it would be like if you could kind of live forever in a virtual afterlife. So those are definitely some of the ones that I really enjoyed so far this year.
Griffin, we got a couple for us.
Oh man, let me think. Well, you know, I did start The Floor is Lava, so that
okay,
was
that's on my
fun
list.
For a little bit. Okay, yeah. That was fun for a little
Speaking
bit.
Speaking of Netflix reality shows, different. Floor is Lava, that one has been on loop in my house the last 3 weeks, and there have been lots and lots of our own games of The Floor is Lava in our living room.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask, how many times have you watched that season?
A lot. Cut you off right there on those same exact lines. Several other people are mentioning Lego Masters, the other reality show that was on loop in, I believe, May in our household. We watched the full season of Lego Masters.
Oh, that sounds cool.
3 times in a row. Yeah. And so have you not seen this one?
I've heard about it, but I haven't watched it.
So they bring in what, like 10 teams of people that are Lego Masters, and then they're given an assignment and they've got 12 hours to build something. And so, I mean, they're 12 hour builds. These are these massive things and it's not rushed. And then Will Arnett is the host on it. And so then he's having a ton of fun. And, you know, there's like, you have to build something that's stable. We're going to destroy your build at the end of this. And we want to see who has the best destruction. And so they get to choose what they build, but they draw it out of a hat before they start how it's destroyed. And so it could be it's blown up with dynamite. It's thrown off of a second story. I mean, it's all kinds of crazy stuff. And so we watched, and then they had to build a bridge once. And it's like, who can build the strongest bridge? And multiple teams built a bridge out of Legos that could hold 1,000 pounds. And they didn't plan ahead for the show. And so they ran out of weights. And so they were literally grabbing the weights for lights and stuff and stacking it on for one of the, I mean, it's just got crazy. We watched that one like on loop for the whole month of May. And then The Floor of His Lava is the one that was new one that we're on all of this. So Griffin, Griffin, you had some on that one?
Oh, I was just going to say, speaking of those, another like weird reality show like that is they just came out with something called The Sims Sparked, where they have Sim influencers from YouTube all come together and like have to design and make houses and people and tell stories. And that just started like last week. And it's like so random, but like, I love Sims. So that's like, if you're a Sims fan, you might find
it. Wow. That's pretty cool.
A lot of random reality shows out there.
Yeah, I see. There's no shortage of shows. That's for sure.
Griffin, continue.
Well, there was Alex Garland's show on Hulu, and I think it was on FX, called Devs. I haven't finished it yet, but I mean, if you like that really again, high concept, thought provoking sci-fi stuff like Annihilation or Ex Machina. And you just are a fan of Alex Garland. That's really good. There was one that I really wanted to watch, but I haven't seen yet, but I had heard good things about, which was Dispatches from Elsewhere, which was like an AMC series with like Jason Segel, but it wasn't a comedy. It was more of like another weird sort of sci-fi series. So I was like, that one I was really interested in, but I haven't checked out yet. Perry Mason on HBO right now is great. So good. If you like your just like good old fashioned, like, you know, detective drama with a great lead in Matthew Rhys, I highly, highly recommend that. And it's only a couple episodes in, so you can get caught up pretty easily. And then I will defer to you or sorry, before I defer to you, I was going to say The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary on ESPN. That was like another one that really like took the internet by storm. And I mean, it's an interesting thing to watch for sure. But the one I was going to go to you for, which was Defending Jacob.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Just trying to remember all the things. I was trying to make a list and think through it, but yeah, Defending Jacob.
Yeah.
So this is a show that I received like 3 months straight. Every single day, someone would ask me, what did you think about Defending Jacob? What did you think about Defending Jacob? And it's like, I don't even know what it is. And then appeared on, I believe, Griffin, your podcast. And one of the other guests was like, oh yeah, this is what it is. And they sold me like one sentence. They said the sentence that no one else had said yet. So I finally checked it out. And my wife and I, we watched it in like 2 days or so, 3 days or something like that. And basically it's this show starring Chris Evans, where he is the DA, assistant DA in this town, and his son is accused of murder. His son's like 14 years old. And the entire show is based around the response to that. Like, do they believe their son? Why is their son doing some of these things? And you're kind of going through it, and they keep giving you conflicting information. They keep showing you something that makes you go, he's guilty. Or they show you something, you go, wait, he's not guilty. Or they show you something that, at least in terms of a court case, this would be reasonable doubt. But then they show you something else that you go, this kid's a psycho no matter what. And so you're watching the parents and their reactions because of their different backstories and their different backgrounds. And you learn about like Chris Evans, his family history, and you learn about the different things that they didn't share with one another. Really, really compelling stuff.
Yeah.
Until the last episode. And it felt
my parents, my mom and my sister said the exact same thing to me.
It was so good. So good. And you're tracking along with each one of these twists and turns, and even kind of like Tiger King, where at the end of every episode, they reveal something new that makes you go, oh, okay, that's what's really going on. Okay. And then the last episode felt like they condensed the crappy second season into a single episode. That's what it felt like. Like, you get to it, and in, you know, 10 minutes, they resolve everything from season one. Like, it's like, oh, tied a nice little ball or package or present. It's all tied up. Nice bow. Bow's the word I was looking for. Then immediately it shifts into, it kind of does something different with it. And you're like, wait, what are we doing right now? Like, wait, what is happening right now? Huh? Like, this is starting to feel a little bit ludicrous. And then it like does even more kind of twists, and it's all in one episode. It's like so much plot all in this like one final episode. And you're like, oh, wow. Like I was so excited for what you were doing. And then.
Is it a limited series?
Limited series. It's based off a book.
Oh, so maybe they were just like, well, we only have this amount of episodes. Yeah. Get it done.
And I don't know if the book also had the same exact ending or what, or if they went, this should be two, or I don't know. But man, it was frustrating.
I believe they changed a lot of that stuff from the book. That from my understanding, because my mom and my sister both read the book, and they had the same reaction that you did to the ending, and they were like, "Oh, well, they changed the ending a bit, and it didn't quite work." But the show as a whole is still like really good.
It was so frustrating because 9 episodes or 7, whatever the number episode count was like just really solid, compelling, drew you in, felt like believable characters, or like you could understand why they were having this tension. It was built episode by episode. And then
It just kind of falls apart. Yeah.
Falls apart. It was just too implausible, too convenient, too like all of the different words all thrown at once. And then you get to the last little shot and you're like, really? Like
that is
so unsatisfying for a show like this and what's kind of promised, the central questions that you're pondering throughout the run of the show. And then you get to the end and it just absolutely did not satisfy at the end. But like I said, it was so good for so much of the runtime. And unfortunately, it did not land the ship for me. Another one that a bunch of people are asking about in here. Have you watched Unsolved Mysteries Revival on Netflix? It was great. I'll go split the difference on that one. I didn't think it was great. I thought some of the episodes were really good and some of them were not so good. So Unsolved Mysteries is this show that I grew up with. It's huge back in the 90s. And basically, it's all about unsolved mysteries, murder mysteries, alien abductions, haunted houses, any weird unsolved mysteries. They would do episodes about it. The old version, it would be like three segments per episode. Here's the best part about all this. Here's the best part. And back in the year 1990, they did a segment about my great-great-grandmother's disappearance. So my family history was on Unsolved Mysteries back in 1990. On my second channel, Sean Chandler Vlogs, I kind of told the whole story about it and linked to where you could watch the whole little segment. But basically, in the year 1910, my grandmother's grandmother disappeared. And nobody knew what happened. And then this whole deal with psychics happened in the 1980s. And so Unsolved Mysteries will always have a special place in my heart. So when they heard it, they were bringing it back. I was all in to check it out. And I really dug the first two episodes. They switched the format. So it's like basically 45 minute long segments on these mysteries. First two I thought were real compelling. And I thought that the rest of them kind of lost some of the momentum. So there were a couple of them that I didn't care. Did either one of you watch it?
No, I just watched your video about your family.
Yeah, I did too. Same. Yeah.
That was my unsolved mystery episode.
Yeah. You know, just so you know, there is murder in my blood, so don't mess with me. There's probably murder in my blood. So, all right. Any final thoughts on anything we missed or anything like that?
Just because like the streaming service launched this year and they didn't really have a whole lot of original shows, I thought that Looney Tunes cartoons on HBO Max was a great revival of like classic Looney Tunes. It's like in comparison to like some of the other runs of Looney Tunes that have come out over like, you know, the past like decades or so, this one feels like the closest to like the original Looney Tunes of what they were getting at, just with like a little bit of a modern spin on it. Music is great. Animation is great. They're funny. They're quick. It's like that quintessential Looney Tunes humor that you could hope for, except for the fact that I guess now Elmer Fudd doesn't have a gun in the series anymore, but whatever.
What does he have?
I never got to the episodes where they actually replaced the gun. So I don't actually know what they replaced it with. Probably like a hammer. Like, I don't know. Some
probably not a cigarette or cigar either. All those things that used to be in children's cartoons that you're like, wait a minute, probably we shouldn't do.
Yeah. But that was the thing. Like, I was watching the show and I'm like, oh, these could have been episodes like back in God. I don't know. Like the 50s, 60s and stuff like that. And I'm like, that's what you want from like a revival of like a show like that, I think.
One more for me. Speaking of HBO Max, my wife and I checked out Love Life, the Anna Kendrick original. It's kind of an anthology series, I guess, the way it's going to play out, where each season shows the love life of a person. So it shows basically 8 years of Anna Kendrick's life. And you kind of see where she's at, I think in the year 2020 or 2018 or something like that. And then it goes back to 2012 and you see kind of the different phases of her love life and the mistakes she made all along the way. It's not normally the stuff I cover on my channel, but it's the sort of stuff that like the wife and I watch. And that it was like, as soon as she's like, oh wait, there's like called Love Life and it starts Anna Kendrick, I'm all in on this. So we watched that one. And he put out like three episode chunks at a time. So it played out over about a month. And so that one was one that when the new one episodes dropped, we checked him out real quick. And it didn't have the highs of Defending Jacob, but it have the it ended on a satisfying note. We're like, yeah, that was solid. I really dug what they did there on that one.
Apparently, according to Jared, they replaced Elmer Fudd's gun with TNT and other weapons of that nature. So yes, far less destructive. Great, great going there, guys.
Good. That's much, much, much better.
I actually have a question for you guys.
Oh, you have a question. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
What is one of your most anticipated shows coming up for the next half of the year?
Lovecraft Country. That's like, I don't think, or maybe I think it's country and not county, but I don't know. That to me, just like it, when you're taking that Lovecraftian sort of like lore and whatnot, and you're infusing it into a TV show. I never read the book that it was based off of, so I have no idea what to expect, but the cast looks great. The trailers are intriguing, so I am all in on that.
Nice.
I mean, I'm the Marvel guy, so my default is all those Disney Plus shows that we may or may not get this year. So that's the tricky part, is that the ones that I'm like, by default, of course I'm pumped about those. I just don't know when they're coming. Likewise, Mandalorian season 2 could be on there. I just don't know if it's actually coming this year or not. My Mandalorian was a really cool show for my son and I, because it was the first time that we had a show that before it came out, we were both excited for it. And so it became our Friday tradition. Aww. I'd pick him up from school, and then we would watch the new episode of The Mandalorian. And then we watch it 2 or 3 more times that night, and then the next few days as well. And so by the time the next episode aired, I'd watched the first previous episode about 7 times. And so that one's a really cool one for us. And then everything that we've heard, all the rumors and everything about season 2, just has me very excited, from the casting to some of the potential cameos that are going to show up, to the secret information that's not all that interesting or secretive that Griffin and I heard when we interviewed a certain person a couple months back. All of it just sounds like stuff that has me very excited for. But you know, so my answers aren't very interesting. They're like, they're super obvious. I'm trying to think, like, there's probably some TV shows I'm forgetting about, but because this year's so weird, I it's tough for me to even know what is and isn't coming out or track any of it. So hopefully maybe we'll have some Comic-Con panels that'll like refresh my brain a little bit to give me some better answers on that one. What should we be excited about?
I mean, I'm excited for Umbrella Academy season 2. I'm excited for The Boys season 2.
Oh, yes, The Boys.
I think that's
there we go.
Cool.
Yeah, there we go.
Yes.
I didn't even watch the trailer. I forgot about it, even though it literally was last week. But yeah. I haven't watched the trailer because sometimes I'm like, I'm going to watch this anyway. So I didn't check it out. I just don't want to see anything going fresh. But absolutely, The Boys. Sorry. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Oh, those are like the two that I'm like really, really excited for. But, you know, Trinket's season 2 is coming back. That's going to be its last season. I'm curious to see what they do with that. I'm trying to think of what else is coming out. Those are some of the ones that are coming out in the next like month or so that I'm like, all right, I can't wait to see what we're going to do. And I feel like Netflix is just constantly like every minute dropping another thing. I'm like, oh, I'm excited for that. So, yeah.
It's tricky with Netflix. I don't think they have the best job of marketing their stuff, and they put so much stuff out that it's tough to even know what isn't coming out. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm sure they'll have some surprise thing I don't know about that I'm going to love. So we'll see what comes with that. But hopefully this next week. I guess, does Comic-Con start today?
Yeah, technically, yeah, it does. Yeah.
So hopefully over the next few days, we'll get some trailers, find out maybe some official release dates on some of these things. That would have me very excited to know what I'll be watching while I'm stuck at home and movies aren't coming out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
If you're listening or if you're on the live stream right now, we're going to keep going for just a little bit longer, but we're going to close out the audio version here. Kristen, where can we find you on the internet, and what's coming up on your channel?
You can find me on youtube.com/KMaldo, KMaldo on Twitter, Facebook, and KMaldo with a 1 at the end on Instagram. And coming up next, I have reviews on Umbrella Academy season 2, which I'm super, super excited about. And this new movie that's coming up called, oh my gosh, what is it called? Written on Bathroom Walls.
Hmm.
And it's really cool. It's like, it stars Charlie Plummer, and it kind of dives into this guy's life story, as someone who's growing up, having schizophrenia, but the way that they tackle it is really, really interesting. So definitely something to check out. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Griffin, where can we find you, and what's coming up?
Yeah, you guys can find me over on the Film Speak channel. I have started my every other day, like, sort of news show. It's on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then Saturdays. It's a live Q&A, as I've been doing. I also launched a Patreon, which is kind of crazy for me because I'm just kind of diving into some new territory here. So that's been really exciting. So definitely, you know, head on over to that channel. Check out all the stuff we got going on over there. I'm trying to think of what I like piece of content I'm going to have coming up. I just put out my review for The Rental. So that's Dave Franco's directorial debut. So if you're interested in that, you can go check out that on the channel. But you can follow me on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
That'll do it for the audio version of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you're wherever you're on your podcast stuff, be sure to leave a rating, leave a review to help us out, and be sure to keep talking movies too much.